Yeah. Chat. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here holding these days hostage. And I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, know through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and welcome to the show. We're here Monday through Friday. I'm here Monday and Wednesday. Our other co-host, SM Gibson, does Tuesdays and Thursdays, but he's here in the studio with us tonight. How you doing, man?
Doing good, man. Enjoying San Diego in this beautiful weather, and I hate y'all all for it.
The weather's actually been pretty bad since you got here,
yeah,
so that's saying something.
It's been rough.
We got all kinds of stuff going on tonight. Make sure you catch, if you miss any of our shows, you can catch the archives. You can catch us on YouTube, UCY-TV. We're also launching live video version of this show tonight. I probably wouldn't encourage anyone to watch that for this show just because it's our first one, and we're going to be working through some technical difficulties here. So thanks for bearing with us. Preemptively, I'm going to say thanks for bearing with us on these technical things. The show, the radio show, should be rolling smoothly. We've been doing this for a while now, and we haven't had many issues as of late. We're also joined in the studio with Jake Anderson, one of our journalists here on the Anti-Media. He also helps us with our video platform that we're getting ready to launch. And he's been writing some really interesting articles for theantimedia.org. And one of the ones that went up today went semi-viral about 10 conspiracy theories that came true. And we're going to get into that a little bit later in the show as well. If anybody is compelled to call in and join this show, and if you want to argue with us or debate us or agree with us or talk about something that maybe we're forgetting to talk about, feel free to join us, 718-717-8296, and you could call in. If we don't acknowledge you right away, just please keep your phone on mute, and we'll get to you once we get through whatever it is that we're talking about at the time. And if we don't pick up your call, feel free to call back. Sometimes we have too many callers on the line. We can't add to the roundtable when we've already got, you know, six or seven people on the roundtable at once. You know, sometimes it gets a bit hectic having so many people on at the same time. But other than that, let's jump into this. We got some relatively good news here coming from the Obama administration. Every now and then it's, you know, this kind of thing happens and it's like, oh, Obama actually is about hope and change. But one of our new journalists, Claire Bernish, looked a little deeper into what was going on today with Obama's announcement. And, you know, of course, it's not everything that they've been saying it is. And it may be, you know, maybe there's a little more to it than we think. And so let's go into that first, you know, right away. So basically what happened today is Obama released a statement that he's going to not allow local police to be able to get their hands on grenade launchers, bayonets, weaponized vehicles, and some other military stuff. Now, I can't really recall the last time I saw cops walking around with bayonets ready to spear people. But I mean, that's a good thing, you know. And of course, the cops don't need grenade launchers now, do they? But it's kind of crazy thinking about the fact that these local cops have actually had access to grenade launchers in the past. I mean, it's like, what in the hell do these guys need grenade launchers for? But they've been repurposing them to use to launch tear gas, right, at people. And so that's what they've been using those for. I don't know if they'd ever actually use real grenades.
Now, here's my question. This is a very, you know, a positive thing, something that needed to happen a long time ago. But is Obama addressing all the military-style weapons that these police departments already own? They already own so much that, you know, just because it's like the United States with nuclear weapons, we can never have another nuclear weapon again. We don't need it. We have plenty.
Right. They already flushed in. Right. They already got so much militarized weapon in these police departments, so much so that they don't even know what to do with some.
Right. Exactly. And so it's a step in the right direction, but at the same time, it really hasn't solved any of the problems that we'll face on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. Claire made a note about this in the article here. So apparently since 1997, the DOD's 1033 program has supplied local police departments with $5.4 billion in equipment, almost $1 billion in 2014 alone. But the thing is that there's been basically no oversight over all this equipment. So even if they do say, hey, okay, send us this stuff back, there's no real surefire way to say, okay, yeah, all this equipment has been sent back, you know, because they weren't really keeping track of it in the first place. So the fact of the matter is that a lot of this stuff is going to remain in the hands of these law enforcement people. So while it did ban some of the stuff, the cops are still going to be able to get their hands on riot gear. They're still going to be able to get their hands on MRAPs. And they're still going to be able to get their hands on the military rifles and, you know, the sniper rifles and that kind of stuff. So basically what Obama's done here is he put one little safeguard in where it's like, okay, well, if the police want to get this stuff, well, they got to go through the city council. So once again, it's kind of where, you know, you got one arm of the government wanting to tell the other arm, okay, like police the other arm of the government. It's not real accountability. It's not a real check and balance. You know, it's kind of just like, okay, here's a Band-Aid. Let's throw it on there. Let's give this to the people and let's hope that they stop bugging
us
about this.
It's a show. He's making it look like he's done something, but in reality, he really hasn't.
Yeah, he's done this on a number of different issues, unfortunately. Just making a symbolic gesture, which he's kind of done on a number of different environmental issues.
And, you know, meanwhile, the march goes on, you know, and the thing is that most of these times where you got these horrible police incidents where people get shot, these guys are shot with handguns, dude. You know, they're not shot with rifles. They're not shot with tanks or with MRAPs. It's like they're shot with regular, you know, service issue handguns by these cops. It's not a matter of like, well, maybe it's not so much the equipment. But it's the mindset that these cops have where they're so trigger happy and they just shoot people. You know, I saw a video earlier today and it happened several months ago in San Diego.
Look at Eric Garner. There was no, you know, militarized weapons needed. He just choked the guy out.
Right.
Exactly. So it's this warrior mindset instead of this mindset that they're supposed to be out there protecting people. And Obama actually made note of that in his statement. What he said is we need to embrace a guardian rather than a warrior mindset to build trust and legitimacy both within agencies and the public and with the public. You know, and this to me is really a Band-Aid fix. Hopefully it does help in the demilitarization and reduction of these horrible weapons that these cops have been getting their hands on. But in the end, it isn't going to change the fact that, you know, people are getting gunned down in the streets on a regular basis because there's no law you can pass that's going to just change the mentality of the cops.
431 so far this year, by the way.
431 people killed by cops so far in the U.S. It's insane. It's insane. I mean, where does it stop? At least they're not going to be getting stabbed with bayonets, according to this new whatever, maybe it's an executive board. I don't even know what it's called. But, you know, onward, we got to keep working at this, keep on trying to hold these cops accountable, because that's the only thing that's really going to change anything is public pressure and making it very unpopular and having real repercussions for when people, when these guys do kill people, when these cops do kill people. We got to make it so that they think two or three times before they pull the trigger, because right now, you know, they're just rolling up and, you know, a guy does something and they just pull the guns out and they shoot people. And it doesn't have to be that way. And if you do got to shoot somebody, I mean, why not shoot a guy in the leg or in the arm or whatever? You know, you don't got to
unload your gun in somebody's back when they're running away.
Exactly. And shooting people in the back when they're running away, I mean, as horrible as that sounds, the courts have actually said it's legal, you know, and this problem goes so much deeper than just these cops. And we all know that the cops are basically just the face of this big system that we're dealing with. The courts are corrupted, the bureaucrats are corrupted, the Congress is corrupted, the executive branch is corrupted. But the cops just happen to be the face of it, so they get most of the frustration. Yeah, Congress has a lower approval rating than cockroaches. But at the same time, it's the cops that are ones that you know, meet the people on the streets and have to deal with this frustration firsthand. You know, the politicians aren't out there seeing people screaming in their face, calling them the worst, you know, things in the world, because I've been at these protests sometimes and people are really laying into these cops, which I understand. But these politicians are shielded from that because the cops are their shield. That's their insulation from the people on the streets. The cops are there, you know, they're not there so much to keep the peace or protect you. More than, you know, more so they're there to protect the status quo, protect the politicians. Don't let federal property get damaged. You know, they spend so much time protecting, police stations and stuff. And, you know, we saw in Ferguson when the activists tried to shut down the police station. And, I mean, it was a huge standoff and the cops wouldn't let them get in. They'll let them go down the street and burn down, you know, random businesses and stuff. And the cop, and then afterwards they're going to, oh, look at all these thugs roaming the streets, you know, tearing up their own neighborhood. And that's what they always say. But they're not going to let anybody tear down any police stations or federal buildings or courthouses or anything like that. That's why you never see those kind of buildings get smashed up in riots. People are like, why are they smashing Rite Aid when they should be smashing up the police station? Well, because they got 5 MRAPs and snipers on the roof and all kinds of stuff at the police station. They'll shoot you down if you try to do that. So, you know, that's part of it. You got to look at who they protect. I remember when I really got
my... Do you think they're going to let them ever burn down a bank? That's never going to
happen. No, they won't. And I have a story that actually goes into that. I remember when I first started realizing truly how awful the police are was when I was at this, we were having a little End the Fed protest here in San Diego. Keep in mind, we don't have a Federal Reserve branch in San Diego, so we went to the next best thing, which was the Chase Bank, the Bank of America. Went to the banks and were protesting outside the banks, and some of the people we were with were doing chalking on the sidewalk and stuff. And the cops formed a line on the bank property. The cops were standing on the bank property, formed a line, and wouldn't let us in. So it just kind of goes to show the cops are out there to protect these corporate interests and these bureaucratic interests a lot more than they are to actually protect the individuals or the, you know, an individual's property, your home or whatever. I mean, if your house gets robbed, they show up 30 minutes later and they take a police report and then they never find out who robbed your place. I mean, that's more or less most of the time that's how it goes. But you try to go down and go into a police station and shut it down, that's you're going to be met with the full force of the surplus supplies of the U.S. military, you know, and that's not a scenario that people really want to get into. So I don't know. I hope this turns out to be a positive thing, but we need a lot more work. That's one thing I want this not to turn into. We don't want this to be just some kind of appeasement where people are like, oh, okay, well now Obama, you know, fixed the police problem. Let's all go back to sleep. No, that's not the case. We got to keep on pushing. We got to keep on fighting. We have a caller from 209. How's it going? You want to join this conversation?
Hello.
Hey, how's it going? You're live on the Anti-Media. Do you want to join us? We're talking about Obama's statement today on demilitarizing police and these issues with this overall police state that we're dealing with. Do you have anything to add?
Well, I think at the start, as I just read that article, where are not allowed to have certain weapons and certain military vehicles. So I think that's interesting. And yeah, I think it's a star and it's shedding light, like, with the mainstream citizens. I'm sure some of them have heard about that, and it's probably drawing attention to them about the militarization of the police force. And I think a lot of people are going to start waking up about it. And yeah, I think it's a good thing.
Well, yeah, that, you bring up a good point there, and I didn't really think about that. But yeah, this will kind of shed some more light for the people that aren't really part of the police accountability movement, and you know, they see this news and they're like, what? They were supplying these guys with grenade launchers? When the hell do they need grenade launchers against U.S. citizens? You know what I mean? And yeah, I guess that really does add a little positive spin to this story.
Yeah. Hold up. Wait a minute. Grenade launchers? Huh. That's I didn't know cops had that.
Yep, they sure do. And they were using them in Ferguson. They were using them in Baltimore. Fortunately, they weren't live grenades, though.
Speaking of Ferguson and Baltimore real quick, I wanted to kind of touch on this, not to kind of steer us off the topic, but we had another story go up today on antimedia.org written by Carrie Wedler, and it talks about how Jay-Z and Beyonce gave tens of thousands of dollars to bail people out of jail in Baltimore and in Ferguson, but they didn't want anybody to know about it, and some random person tweeted about it, who supposedly asked Jay-Z for the money, and they later deleted the tweets and acted like, you know, it didn't really happen, but it was kind of like wink, wink, nudge, nudge, it really did happen. So what are y'all's thoughts about this? About, is this a good thing?
I mean, I don't know, man. I Beyonce and Jay-Z have been, they've become so politicized, you know, that it's like, it's hard to really say. I mean, I don't know what their agenda is. I know Jay-Z makes crappy music.
Yeah, we definitely agree on that.
Agree on that.
I mean, it could be a PR move for them. I mean, I think they probably actually do believe in funding. It's either, there's probably a combination of them genuinely wanting to help out with a messed up situation, and maybe doing some brand management on the whole Illuminati thing. Who knows?
And then, you know, we sit here and we think about these people because they're, you know, pop culture icons. But, you know, in reality, we're talking about two people with a lot of money. And that money brings power. You know, and there's all the rumors of, you know, George Soros funded this and that. And, you know, Jay-Z has a lot of money. He doesn't have George Soros money, but he's got a lot. And, you know, he can wield influence in these situations. And for me, it's just trying to say, okay, well, is this a genuine thing? It's like you said, was it a PR stunt? Could they have had somebody just tweet this out to get the, so they could get some attention and then act like, oh, we don't want the attention?
Well, there's also a sense in which the powers that be deputize one of these higher up people to kind of put a stop, you know, stop the blood flow a little bit on this social wound by making it look like people in these upper classes do care and are willing to spend some money on it. I mean, I think there's a systemic symbolic gesture here as well. Weird story, though, to be honest. That kind of weirded me out all day when I read about that.
Yeah, man. I mean, I don't know. It's a crazy situation. It's good that the people got bailed out. It's good they didn't have to rot in jail for more days.
It's cool if they did it, for sure.
And I mean, who knows? I always give people the benefit of the doubt if they're changing their stance politically. If Jay-Z wants to come out against police brutality, man, I welcome him in. You know. And you know, hopefully we can use his celebrity to further the movement.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's one thing. You know, a lot of people in the activist circle, if you mention a celebrity's name, well, they just automatically are just like, oh, no.
Right.
But, you know, these are people that are in, you know, everyday society. They're on people's TV when they speak for whatever reason, right or wrong, people do listen. So if there is somebody with a voice, Russell Brand, for example.
Right, yeah.
People don't, you know, people disagree with him. Some people hate him, whatever. But he's somebody that used his public persona, to start talking about real issues. Right. Roseanne Barr is another one.
Man, I was asking years ago, I was like, why do more celebrities not come out? I mean, they're real people. They understand their real problems. They also realize they're mortals and they're going to die just like the rest of us. Why would they not? I mean, there's got to be a couple of them that feel strongly about these issues and want to try and help. Why are they not coming out of the woodwork? And I swear it was like a year out. I must have put the energy out there. Not really, but I swear about a year later, all of a sudden, all these celebrities started coming out, and it was cool.
Power of intention, man.
Yeah.
I credit you with all these celebrities.
I'm single-handedly causing Russell Brand to get up in the morning.
So it's kind of interesting that you bring this up, because we may or may not have Roseanne Barr coming on the radio show sooner or later, maybe in the next, hopefully before next week. Actually, we're hoping for this week because we're hoping to talk to her about Monsanto, and we know the March Against Monsanto is coming up this Saturday.
She's
on
been
the 23rd.
Very vocal against Monsanto.
She has, you know, spoken out against Monsanto in the past. But we are planning on asking her that very question that you mentioned: why is it that these celebrities don't come out more often? And I'll tell you at least one of the reasons why. It's because there was an article that Kanye West actually wrote a couple weeks ago. We covered it. Where he was basically saying, "Oh, I'm not part of the Illuminati. I'm tired of people accusing me of that." And that's, you know, I think he was kind of writing it in a lighter tone. It was kind of a funny article or whatever. But at the end, he's like, "Yeah, I mean, you know, we do have to censor ourselves. We can't write what we want to write because, you know, they tell us what is okay and what is not okay." So I think that's part of it. You know, so if you're talking about people in Hollywood and they actually start making a big time impact with their activism. I'm not talking about like George Clooney and stuff. I'm talking about like doing something that's actually having like a really big impact. Then you can see possibly where Hollywood would start treating those kind of people as outsiders, stop giving them, you know, gigs.
And it'll be the new McCarthyism.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, they say, you know, if you want to speak out against Monsanto, well then you got to find someone else to hire you for movie. You know what I mean? So,
right.
You know, we got to remember that all of Hollywood, all of the media, it's all owned by these like five or six giant corporations that have all these various interests. Like, you know, GE has interests in the media. They also have interests in the military industrial complex. You know, and these ties go very deep. And I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of these ties go back to all these other companies like Monsanto and Goldman Sachs. We know that one's for sure. So, you know, these celebrities have to be careful about what they say and what they don't say, because it could put their entire careers on the line by just by misstepping one time.
Right. And I think, you know, you've had somebody like Roseanne, for instance, who was a little bit older and, you know, she'd made her money, she had made her mark. I don't think she really cared, you know, if she was beholden to her bosses anymore. And I think Brand's another one where he just threw his hands up and walked away from the whole thing. Because I think there is some legitimacy to, once you come out and say certain things, there's going to be a unspoken blackball put on that person. People aren't going to work with them. They're going to label them as crazy. I mean, David Icke was a celebrity before he was David Icke. And, you know, he came out on TV and started saying all this stuff that people are like, what are you saying?
What are you talking about? He screwed himself over by saying everyone was reptiles. So he would have been a serviceable conspiracy theorist if he hadn't started talking about the being a reptile.
I do think that, you know, the whole reptilian argument, which is still just the most mind-blowingly genius and amazing thing anyone's ever thought of, how anybody would come to that conclusion that the Queen of England is a reptile. I mean, granted, she does have some kind of leathery skin, but I don't think that makes her necessarily a Ninja Turtle.
Not amphibious.
Now, there is another celebrity that recently has been making waves, and this guy's like well-respected, too. We're talking about Morgan Freeman. But again, I think he's at that stage, what you were talking about, where he is older now, and he doesn't really need the work anymore. And now he can speak his mind. Now he's coming out and saying, yeah, dude, I smoke weed. Shit, I'll eat weed. I'll do whatever. And he's saying, like, legalize it, you know, everywhere. And then the other day, and prior to that, he said, regarding the coverage of Baltimore by the corporate media, he said, F the media, straight up. He said, F them.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
like, they're distorting it. Yeah. And he's like, and then he even went as far to as applauding independent journalists, live streamers, people like that that are showing us this raw story, you know? And I mean, so I think it can happen. It just, it's not going to come from the people who you'd like it to come from. Like, you're not going to see Brad Pitt actually commit like real effective activism. Like the stuff he does and Angelina Jolie, you know, it's all kind of like window dressing for in a large part, but you will see people that may or may, you know, people that have already become like fallen out of Hollywood that were like former celebrities, or you'll see people that are like older now that don't need the money or whatever, like Morgan Freeman. And
dude,
so
I smell an article here. I think there could be an article about like, yeah, we'll talk about it later.
I mean, shit, you never know who's going to come next. You know, we get surprised all the time. I mean, LeBron James was out there, you know.
Yeah, with the Black Lives Matter.
Yeah, hands up, don't shoot.
That shocked a lot of people, and it
yeah.
hurt a lot of people.
It made a lot of people.
He took a lot of heat for that.
Yeah.
When he was on the Heat.
Yeah.
but what's funny, he was just talking about Morgan Freeman, and people are never happy because Morgan Freeman has come out, and he was on, you know, because LeBron James said Black Lives Matter, oh, well, he's wrong, blah, blah, blah. They got, you know, that offended people for whatever odd reason, I don't understand. And Morgan Freeman came out and said, he was talking with Don Lemon on CNN, and Don Lemon said something to the effect of how black men in America don't have the same opportunities. And Morgan Freeman's like, yeah, you're wrong. And he's like, well, what are you talking about? He's like, because I'm sitting here talking to you on CNN, and we're both black men, and we made it to this point. He's like, it doesn't mean it's easy. And there are disadvantages. And then they asked him the question about racism, and he said, well, how do you stop racism? And Morgan Freeman's answer was, stop talking about it. And
it's an interesting perspective. I disagree, but it's an interesting perspective. You know what I mean? I mean,
I'll say this. Morgan Freeman is a black man from Mississippi, and I'm not. So he obviously has much better perspective on the entire issue than I ever could.
I don't think people in certain class levels can possibly have the kind of perspective on these issues that is necessary to effectively address them. I know that sounds classist, but I don't think a rich, rich, rich man can talk about privilege.
Right.
He can talk about racism, but he can't talk about the enforcement of racism as a political system.
Right. Well, you get the same thing, and that's the big thing you get with celebrities. Anytime a celebrity comes out and says anything of true substance, especially with the way the banks were and the Occupy movement, every single person that said something about the Occupy movement, they said, but you're rich.
Right. Well, that's how Russell Brand, he took a lot of heat from that.
Right.
I remember one, probably Vince Vaughn, or one of the real asshole right-winger celebrities was like, oh, well, if you're so wanting to save the world, why don't you give up all your money, Russell Brand?
Right.
Like, dude, you're missing the whole point. You're
yeah.
missing the whole point. It's not a juvenile game of who has more marbles. It's trying to get the mainstream media out of people's ears and getting real truth into their head, you know?
Absolutely. All right, Nick, we've gone to TMZ on this one. Bring us back home.
So, I want to get into Jake's article, just because it's going to take a little bit. And, you know, much is made about conspiracy theories, Illuminati, reptilians, all of this stuff. Some of it's like far-fetched and way out there. Some of the stuff is a lot more truthful in nature, and that's what your article is about.
Yeah.
10 conspiracy theories that are actually came true, that people were saying happened, but at first were denied by the government, and the media for the most part would follow the official narrative. We see this happening in real time right now with the Bin Laden story and the whole Bin Laden death. And now that a extremely esteemed journalist has written I think it was a 10,000 page or yeah, I think it was a 10,000 word report on this thing, not 10,000 pages, 10,000 words. That calls into question a lot of the details regarding the Bin Laden raid and how Obama took Bin Laden and all this other stuff. So one of the tweets, and we put this out for like the last radio show, I think on Thursday, right? Yeah, we put this out on Thursday, but it nobody really knew who this person was, so it didn't. Not that many people clicked on it. Anyway, I don't even remember what her name was, but the statement is true now. It's like if people spent as much time debunking like the official Bin Laden raid or like the official narratives as they do trying to debunk the debunkers, because like that was the whole thing. It's like all of a sudden the next day after this report comes out, it's like everybody and their mom is trying to debunk the Hirsch report. You know what I mean? They're all trying to debunk it. And the tweet came out and Glenn Greenwald retweeted it. And he said, you know, if people spent more as much time looking into what the government claims to be happening, we'd all be in a better place than we are right now, because then the corruption would just be, I mean, it would be investigated like on the spot. You know? So these stories like the Bin Laden raid, and you know, whenever anything breaks about the NSA or anything like that, and we're hearing this official narrative coming out, there's a really good chance that there's some secrecy, there's something that's misleading, something that's being covered up, something that's being lied about. And Jake's compiled 10 different instances where this has happened in the past in the U.S., and we've been able to prove that they've actually happened.
Yeah, there's a whole history of conspiracy theories turning out to be true. And unfortunately, conspiracy theories are stigmatized, sometimes rightfully so, but people think of, you know, UFO cover-ups, they think of chemtrails, they think of 9/11 truthism. And to be fair, I'm not saying any of those aren't necessarily true. We just don't have the full evidence for it yet. That said, there are
conclusive evidence.
Conclusive evidence, yes.
The reason a lot of these conspiracy theories are, you know, exist in the first place, true or not, is because there's some kind of circumstantial evidence that people can cling to and say, oh, well, this doesn't like make sense right here. So therefore, you know, we're still questioning the fact that whether or not this is a true story. And that's a healthy thing to do. We need more of it.
It's a form of.
Now, we don't need as many people like becoming like demagogues about it.
Right.
But we need more and more people to be questioning the official narrative so that we can get down to the truth quicker.
Well, I'm starting a cult that I'm going to be the leader of that's just going to push conspiracy theories. So.
Wait, isn't that
InfoWars?
Yeah, that's InfoWars.
Oh, no,
right. It already exists.
All right. Well, you can call me Jones from now on then. Jim Jones.
Oh, no, man.
Do you want me to go into a couple of these?
Yeah, so I mean...
Yeah, well, okay, there's
so wait, are lizards on here, yes or no? That's all I need to know. Are the lizards on here?
The lizards. The reptilians from planet Nibiru are not on here, unfortunately, and they could very well be here. It could be they could be in our ears right now. But for this list, I wanted it to be 10 completely documented, unchallengeable, indisputable truths. And these are all conspiracy theories that once drew the same level of vitriol and derision as things like GMOs and chemtrails do now. These were all heavily derided, and turns out they were true. Number one, the Gulf of Tonkin incident. Now, this was Lyndon Johnson's official legal justification for military involvement in Vietnam. The problem is it never happened. It never actually happened. And a declassified internal NSA study revealed that there were no Vietnamese vessels anywhere in the area. President Johnson later said, "For all I know, our Navy was shooting at whales out there." In a report
this didn't come out until 2005.
This didn't fully come out until 2005, right when we were in the real teeth.
And
of
it
the
happened
world
back time. In the 60s.
Happened back in the 60s, and the guy who wrote the report, NSA's own historian, makes a very powerful point. I think it's the actionable thing to take from this one is the parallels between this faulty intelligence on Tonkin Gulf and the manipulated intelligence used to justify the Iraq war are interesting. And I think we all know that these kinds of events are being used. Fictions are created by the government to further a foreign policy agenda. And we have to be more scrupulous with how we let the media guide us into these things.
And, you know, the thing to me, and this is what kind of makes what we were just saying like even more valid, is that it took like 40 years for the truth to fully come out on this Gulf of Tonkin. And we, for those that aren't familiar with the Gulf of Tonkin, it's where the U.S. claimed to have been, you know, being attacked, right, by a Vietnamese ship, and they supposedly, you know, it was this conflict, and it's basically what gave them the justification for to go into Vietnam. And it just never even happened.
Yeah,
it's made up.
They used it. Johnson used it to expand the war. They already had advisors there, and they were there.
Yeah.
Under Kennedy.
Oh, they had advisors? That sounds familiar.
Yeah, but you know, Kennedy wasn't really jumping too deep into it. But he, you know, they were already had a presence there. But Johnson just full steam ahead through them in it, and that was the basis of it, was the Gulf of Tonkin.
Well, and they tried to do it again, and this is actually a different conspiracy theory. And fortunately, this one didn't actually happen, but Operation Northwoods is number 4 on the list. And honestly, this one shocked me more than any other one on there. It's not the most tragic, but it's the most shocking, which is the Joint Chief of Staffs of the U.S. military drew up and approved plans to create false flag terrorist acts on U.S. soil in order to sway the American public into supporting a war against Cuba. Now, it didn't happen because John F. Kennedy said, you guys are out of your rocker, and denied it. He didn't let it happen. But essentially, the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the U.S. military literally drew up and approved plans to, this is what they were going to do. They wanted innocent Americans being shot dead on the streets. They wanted boats carrying refugees to be sunk on the high seas. They wanted a violent wave of terrorism launched in D.C., people being framed for bombings they did not commit, planes being hijacked. This isn't conspiracy. They actually did this. Our government actually drew up plans to do this.
Here's what's terrifying when you put and combine those two stories. You've got Kennedy, and they've got Northwoods, and he's refusing to go along with it.
Right.
Well, Kennedy gets his head blown off. The very next president is involved in basically a false flag with the Gulf of Tonkin to drag us in the war.
Interesting connection and point. Absolutely. I didn't even make that connection. Yeah. I mean, it could very well. I mean, JFK's assassination is not on this list because I just don't think we have the smoking gun on that.
So after they couldn't get JFK to commit to killing his own people in the country, they were like, you know what? I mean, shit, we could just make something up.
Right.
Why even kill people and like actually harm people and frame the Cubans or whatever when we could just make stories up and the media is just going to eat it up and we're just going to push it out there, man. And that's what they did.
It seems like an early template for stuff that we've seen.
I mean, it's just like the one of the journalists that you cited there, one of those quotes that you have. What the guy was saying is that it's very similar to the way that they manipulated the to get the U.S. into the Iraq War,
right,
2001, 2003, because Iraq had to do with 9/11. I mean, they just started making stuff up, the weapons of mass destruction,
right,
this, that, and the other thing, and like then the whole truth of the matter comes out. Like, they actually did find weapons of mass destruction, but it were the ones that we supplied them with back in the 80s. And they didn't want to talk about those ones, so they acted like they didn't find any. I mean, the whole thing was cooked up, and like the fact that these other conspiracy theories are kind of coming to light now, it just goes to show that a lot of this stuff we're talking about now, there's Bin Laden death, even the WMD stuff has been proven true.
Right.
You know, that's only been, you know, it's only been like 12 years since that, those lies.
Absolutely. And then you get people, though, that are so quick to jump to conclusions because they want people that question things to be painted as crazy. Because as soon as you say any sort of phrase about conspiracy Bin Laden, oh, so you didn't think he died, huh? It's like nobody's saying that at all. That's not even been suggested.
Of course he's dead.
Well, of course he's been dead. But, you know, you get people that just jump to this crazy thing. It's like you question anything. Oh, so you just believe aliens are coming down. I mean, they just jump to the craziest thing
ever. They do. They're more conspiracy theory debunkers are far more reactionary and hysterical. From my experience,
just to question something, you get thrown into that.
I mean, let's look at it this way, man. Let's look at it from a profit perspective from the military-industrial complex. Now, would it be profitable for them to go in and then it's like 2004? It's like, oh, we got Bin Laden. The war's over. You know what I mean? Or would it be more profitable to say, oh, let's drag this thing out for as long as possible? And it, when anyone starts getting hot on our trail, then we'll act like Bin Laden. Then we're like, oh, we got him.
But
now we got a new problem in Iraq. We got ISIS. You know what I mean? Now it's like all of a sudden there's something else there. So it doesn't even matter that we got Bin Laden. Forget about Bin Laden being dead. Now we got ISIS. We're about to go back in there. Iraq City just got lost today. Another big city in Iraq fell to ISIS today. And it's only a matter, just like you said earlier, Vietnam started out with those advisors. Well, we've been having our advisors in Iraq. Now we're sending equipment. We're sending limited supply of troops. It's only a matter of time before these guys, the next president, if it's a Republican, I can pretty much guarantee it, they're sending ground troops back into Iraq. I mean, that's what's going
there. There will be another war on terror if there's a Republican candidate. There will probably be another Republican president. There will probably be another
war. Well, the war on terror is just going to just continue,
It'll be regardless of the party.
I think it's pretty much already a given, because the only real Democrat they say with the shot to win is Hillary, and she's a neocon.
Yeah,
she's going to war.
She could be running in either party, and no one would even know.
Right.
Like, no one would know the difference.
I think she has one of those MRAPs in her, you know, that she carries around with her.
Yeah. She's probably got her own personal MRAP just to keep Bill safe. But yeah, man, I mean, this later on we're going to find out, you know, and we've been saying this for a long time. Like, we're not saying that ISIS is a CIA operation. What we're saying is that ISIS has a lot of weapons that have been supplied into Syria from us. Whether they stole them from the rebels, whether they were accidentally given to them, whether they were purposely given to them, we don't know that for sure yet.
But there's too much connection, especially with John McCain and pictures of these people together in the stories. Well, then they turned bad. We were just helping them out, and they turned.
Yeah, they got a bad poker hand,
and they can get away with that. I mean, they did it with the Taliban, right?
Let's see, Saddam Hussein, he was on our side, then he turned bad. Bin Laden on our side, then he turned bad. ISIS on our side, then he turned bad. Is anybody seeing a pattern here?
Exactly, man. So whether they're controlled by the CIA is one thing. Whether it's a product of U.S. policies in one way or another, that's a given. You know, that's for sure. But it's not until later on where these files become declassified and stuff, and it's horrible that we have to sit here and wait for this kind of stuff.
Oh yeah.
This is not a democratic process. The government doesn't just go around lying to you and then 20 years later saying, "Oops, you know, like here's what actually happened, but you know, we were doing it for your own freedom and stuff." And so this is so far gone from like a democratic process for all of this stuff to be able to happen, where these guys get away with lying about WMDs, they get away with lying about the Gulf of Tonkin and all this shit.
Well, here's one that most people don't realize. Speaking of kind of conspiracies, is there's a bunch more files on the Kennedy assassination that are going to be released 75 years after the fact. And the reason they chose 75 years for them to be released is because they figured they'd all be dead and it didn't matter anymore.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, people are about to be living longer, so they might have to push that 75 years.
There's a lot of people,
but all the people that were around in 1963 are going to be dead.
Yeah.
So, and that was kind of their point, I think.
Yeah, they just know they're going to get away with it,
right? And they did. Whoever did what?
Oh, they looted the whole country. This whole country. They shredded our middle class in order to pour more money into the military. I mean, that there's a conspiracy theory.
I'm so sick of hearing people talk about Lyndon Johnson passing. Oh, he was such a great man because he passed the Civil Rights Bill. And then he turned around and killed how many Vietnamese children was he responsible for? How many of those brown people got killed because of Lyndon Johnson? There's your Civil Rights Bill.
Yeah, that guy is a scumbag. And he just, you know.
I'm glad he's dead.
Yeah,
man. So, we got a bunch of other conspiracies here that have come true.
Yeah, well,
which one are you going
to
go into?
I mean, people who are interested in this should definitely go to the antimedia.org and check out the article. It's on the homepage. I mean, there's MK Ultra is on here. People know a lot about that. If you don't know what MK Ultra is, you got a night of Google ahead of you, because you absolutely have to hear about that one. I think an important one to get to, or you know. We know that the NSA has been illegally spying on us.
That was a conspiracy since the Patriot Act was passed. There was a bunch of these tin hat wearing conspiracy theorists running around saying, "Dude, the NSA is spying on us, man. Like,
they can't.
You gotta be careful what you say."
Why did they do that?
And then you know those guys were just tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorists for about 13, 14 years before it was finally validated and Snowden leaks all these documents. Like, oh shit, they're collecting all the metadata. They're collecting a bunch of our phone data on American citizens that aren't even terrorists. It's like, oh damn, that stuff's really happening. But then the media, even though that happened, the media is still able to sit there and spin it so bad that. There was a poll that just came out where it said like the majority of Americans look at Edward Snowden as a traitor.
Right.
But overseas, like in Europe and stuff, everyone looks at him as a hero.
It's what Malcolm X said.
Yeah, so like the media is still so in control of the quote unquote popular opinion. And like you got to remember that these polls themselves can be used just to manipulate public opinion too. The data can be tweaked to a point to basically support any side of a topic. You know, so we got to keep that in mind too. So what they're trying to do is build this status quo that's like, okay, Edward Snowden is a criminal. Whistleblowing is a bad thing. Questioning your government, it should be criminalized. I mean, this is the message that's being sent to all these people. And the people that are, you know, still getting these phone, these landline phone surveys and stuff like that, the people that are still the majority of people that are voting, you know, they're still buying into a lot of this crap. And that's one of the biggest problems, man, is that the voting public, the mainstream public is very duped by all this, all these things like the NSA and like still not even being that angry that it's happening. Yeah. They don't even look at that as a problem. They're just like, well, if I'm not doing anything wrong, then I shouldn't have to worry about it. But they don't understand the slippery slope when you start undermining your freedoms and your liberties and stuff. And that's why countries always set up constitutions, because they know that they have to like put a restraint on the power of the state to intervene in your life and stuff like that, because otherwise it's going to run rampant like it has throughout history, whether it's monarchy or dictatorships, empires, and stuff like that. It didn't really matter. So they put constitutions in place to try to constrain that. But nowadays you have this prevailing mentality of like, oh, well, you know, if you don't like it, then leave, or, you know, people are like, well, it doesn't matter. We're still the freest country. We're the best country in the world and stuff. It's like, dude, in some ways you could be right. But like, if you keep up with this attitude of like, whatever, like, just let them undermine our rights. Little by little by little, it's just more and more of your rights gone to the – and then it's like the boiling frog. You know, it's like the water level rises so slowly that no one even realizes it until it's basically too late. And we're in those points right now where it's almost too late, man. Like – The militarization of the police, I mean, you can tell that it's a big topic because Obama's sitting there today putting out this statement that he's not going to allow the militarization of the police any longer. But as we talked about, that's really just a superficial fix. It is a positive step, but it is still superficial. Doesn't address like a lot of
the concerns.
This is the
same guy who was going to get us out of Afghanistan, right? And close Guantanamo?
Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
People just listen to it. I'm trying to think you think I was talking to some guy.
Sorry. Yeah, you're on the line. You're on the Anti-Media Radio. You want to join the conversation?
Yeah, sure, man. I was actually calling in, and I was listening to what y'all was talking about in like the Middle East. I just wanted to kind of, I don't know. I was thinking today. I mean, I don't know as much as you guys, but I mean, has anybody ever thought like the actual goal in the Middle East? I mean, what if the goal in the Middle East was to make things like so bad? To where, like, I don't know, it's just a theory, but what if the ultimate goal was to make things so bad over there to where it's just like the whole world gets tired of it and goes in and like diversifies it? I mean, that's a little crazy, man, but I was thinking about that today because, man, there's a lot of countries that have been falling here, I mean, in the past few years in the Middle East. I mean, it's still a real, like, very tribal region, you know? I don't know. It's something I just started thinking about today.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's in a way it's like purposely held hostage, and they purposely play players against each other down there. And as long as they can keep the regions destabilized, they can continue to suck the resources dry, because the only thing that can stop the resources from being taken from the empires is an organ, like the people of the country organizing together and taking collective control over those resources and stuff like that.
Right, right.
And that isn't going to happen as long as you have a bunch of warring factions going after each other. But the area is being exploited like crazy because this oil stuff, man, it's one day or another it runs out. You know what I mean? And so for now, we're playing these guys. The powers that be are playing these guys against each other, and it's costing hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of lives. And it's all for this oil. And sooner or later, once it runs dry, they're just going to abandon the area, and it's just going to be a complete wasteland, man.
Here's a question, y'all, and I would like to get y'all's opinion on this. Kind of talking about what Carl was talking about. Do you think that they're in the Middle East for the sole purpose of complete destabilization, and we really have no agenda to win any war? We just want to make some noise and stay here because that's more money for the military-industrial complex. It's more money for Halliburton. That's more money for these contractors, and just have this perpetual war going on.
I bet every dollar I own that that's the
reason. Or do you really think, like Wesley Clark said, the plan was to go in there, overthrow seven countries, and just run the whole thing?
Okay, I think there's elements of truth. I think there's an idealistic side of the people running things that on a conscious level, they have to think of a reason why they're doing this. But
in the end, it's the most heinous form of corporate welfare, man.
Right.
So basically what you have going on is you got a bunch of people that live in the U.S. that all work, and they all live, for the most part, live productive lives in one way or another. And what you have is this act of war being used as a way to transfer wealth from all the working people through taxes into basically corporate profits, right? Whether we're talking about military-industrial complex, that's where our money goes directly. But then what they do is the military-industrial complex goes in, secures the location for all these other corporate interests, whether it's oil or other natural resources or to secure labor, whatever it is that they're doing. They lay the groundwork to basically set up the corporate industrial complex. And, you know, all these industries go in there and they start raiding the place for the resources. Meanwhile, puppet governments are set up and there's always like a rebel faction and there's the puppet government and they're always at war with each other. I mean, dude, it's like textbook stuff. Every country that we go into, it's like the same thing. So it's in a way, I mean, maybe it's a very, very advanced form of warfare that these guys are using, where they're just using these very psychological techniques to slowly but surely just take over.
And here's something, talk about rebuilding these countries in Iraq and the problems they've had in rebuilding Iraq. And I get it's a different country than what I'm going to mention is the example. But, you know, everybody acts like this has never happened before. They rebuilt Germany after World War II. They rebuilt Japan. And so it's not like they've never done this before. There's been success in helping countries actually prosper. But Iraq, they just can't figure out. They just can't get it together.
Can I bring up the topic?
Yeah, sure. We got a caller from 661. Go ahead.
I wanted to know, what is your guys' opinion as far as Operation Jade Helm?
I don't know, man. Jade Helm, it's been talked about a lot, and it's been like, I think it's been blown out of proportion. Personally, I'm never a fan of military drills going on in like neighborhoods and stuff. I don't think that we need to be doing that. But at the same time, I mean, it's a limited number of people, troops, equipment. I think it's just all part of this grand military scheme that they got going on. I don't think it's technically, like, I don't think it's what people have been saying as far as like they're going to try to take over Texas, or it's like the precursor to martial law and stuff. I really don't believe that. But at the end, it's still an egregious abuse of, you know, our money, our freedom, our work, for them to be going and parading around, you know, towns in the Southwest and in Texas with all this military gear, helicopters, Humvees, and, you know, who knows what else.
Do you believe any of this? It's being done to condition people?
I mean, that also plays into it. It normalizes military action, you know, and what do you think about it from 661?
Well, I kind of believe maybe they are pushing towards basically making anything big happen for martial law, basically. What basically got me into the topic to begin with was a while back when I first watched Jesse Ventura when he went to the FEMA camp, and basically on his episode from what I watched from there, basically just changed my perspective on what they're really trying to do. And yeah, that's basically my perspective on it. I really do think that they're trying to do something big and basically like a 9/11 type of thing all over again to make us feel like we need further security, and then that's when they're gonna do their whole martial law scheme. I mean, that's just how, my opinion on it, though. And I'm not sure if it's correct.
That's a wild conspiracy theory. Although I will say, and I'm eventually gonna write a piece about this. There is an uncanny precedent being set with virtually every terrorist attack that has happened, major terrorist attack that has occurred in the last since 9/11. There is an unbelievably high percentage of them that it has involved some kind of military or police drill happening that same day in that same area. This is a conspiracy theory as of right now, but as the list attests to, sometimes conspiracy theories are conspiracy facts. So my point is, well, we don't know, but who knows?
But with those other drills, they weren't highly publicized.
Yeah, that's
everybody's talking.
And so here's
about
the thing:
they couldn't
like,
get away with doing anything.
Yeah,
everybody knows.
If it was going to be something, it's not going to be anymore. I don't think, just because now it's like well known, and like whenever something like conspiratorial
all
gets pulled off,
do,
legitimately,
happens,
it's very secret.
Alex Jones is going to go 24/7. Go, I told you so. I told you so. I told you
that
so.
That won't affect anything though. They'll brush over that with the media in two
But
minutes.
He will literally like it will 100%. They like
no one will remember that people were talking about it beforehand.
I mean,
no,
here's the fact of the matter, dude. We're worried about martial law with Jade Helm. We just had martial law in Baltimore,
right.
Not, you know, several months, like a month
hey.
Ago. You know, so I mean, it's already, and then you know, we've seen it multiple times. We saw it in Ferguson.
It in
whenever there's a curfew,
I
mean, that's insane. And like here in San Diego, I don't know about everywhere else in the country, but in San Diego, there's a curfew if you're under 18 at 10 p.m., dude. Like that, like we're the youth in our country are already living under like some form of very like martial law type of scenario. I've been detained and cited when I was a kid one time for being out of the curfew, dude. And like it was egregious too, because the guy, I was pulled over for my taillight, and it was before 10 o'clock. And by the time I got my ticket, it was after 10. He's like, now I got to give you a ticket for breaking the curfew. I'm like, dude, this is crazy. This is insane. And, like, I witnessed that as, like, a 16-year-old kid. But, like, it's a, you know, we're already living under, like, such horrible, you know, in many ways just abusive, in an abusive relationship with the government, whether it's abusing our productivity, whether it's taxing, whether it's incarceration, whether it's a drug war, whether it's, you know, just the system as a whole, it's already messed up. So, you know, I'm not too like worried about like these, like whenever anyone is like predicting like martial law and stuff, normally it just like kind of blows over, but slowly, quietly, it's like being practiced like in many other ways.
They're preparing
I mean?
For it for a reason.
I will say
local police departments are preparing for martial law.
Also, just I don't mean to interrupt you guys, but also another topic that I've been thinking about as well that kind of has to do with it. What do you guys think about the whole RFID chip implants and stuff like that? Because I've seen some places, well, from the internet, so I don't really know if it's too true, but a lot of them were talking about some people already have them for certain businesses and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's a place, I think it's a medical business that has they're already having their employees with voluntary RFID chips that they're embedded in their hands, and they use it to like open the doors. It's like a key card, but it's embedded up your skin or whatever. And so yeah, that stuff's already being practiced, and the RFID technology, it's like very, very small now. Like you can make it down to the size of like a grain of rice or smaller even, you know. And so I mean, that's a very real conspiracy theory. Now the big question, like with any other technology, RFID, you know, could be put to use for, you know, to make your life a lot more convenient. But at the same time, just like with the smartphones and like kind of how Snowden kind of validated this stuff, it's like all of this stuff can be used to spy on you, to track you, you know, all this stuff. So RFID is like the same thing. If they ever start talking about making it mandatory, that's like crazy. But just the technology in general, I mean, it could be used for good or bad, you know?
Do you also believe that's what they talk about in the Bible?
This is the end of the show. Thanks for tuning in. Catch us tomorrow, 5 days a week, same time. Peace.
Thank you.
I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.